Tia Ditch agus Fáilteoireacht hag Podchraolú Bite Size Irish. Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Irish podcast. Is mé sin díol ó síl. Well, aflín faoi washit Ditch, Happy New Year to you. Hope you had a lovely break over the last few weeks and that January has been treating you well. Of course, it's a great time of year for resolutions and new starts, so if you're feeling ready to start or continue your Irish language journey, why not learn at your own pace with Bite Size Irish? Whether you want to dip your toes into the language at your own pace or learn and practice with others, we're here to help. We have an offer for you as a podcast listener. You can get 10% off monthly or annual membership at Bite Size Irish. There's no long-term contract and we have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Just go to offer.irish to get your 10% off every month or year of membership. That's offer.irish to get our exclusive podcast listeners discount of 10% off your Irish language journey. Well, it's quite stormy here in Dublin at the moment and I can hear the wind howling outside. So if you're feeling all elemental like me, I think you'll enjoy today's episode. Today, my colleague Owen dives into prehistoric Ireland to ask if the Neolithic people who built some of our most impressive ancient monuments would have spoken an early form of Irish. In other words, we know Irish is an Indo-European language, but when did it first come to these shores? I'll leave it to Owen to lead the discussion.
Hi, I'm Owen from Bite Size Irish and Fáilte Isteach. We're going to go on a special journey today. I'm going to bring you to Mohan Hill Fort, and it's just outside of Newmarket and Fergus in County Clare. So it's about halfway between Ennis, where I grew up, and Limerick, where I live. So it's really accessible and it's pretty quiet. And maybe the locals will be like, "Owen, shut up, don't tell people about Mohan." I would have gone there as a kid with my family, so I've got old, good memories of being there. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten to know a little bit more about the ancientness of it, how old it is, and maybe the story that, weaves into the location. When I visit prehistoric locations in Ireland, like Brúna Boyne or Newgrange, and then Mohan, Dalmans in County Clare, there's always a question that comes up for me, and it's, did the people who built this structure, this ancient structure, did they speak Irish? Did they speak an older form of Irish? Or was it a completely different language? What language was being spoken at the time? And was it killed off? Did it die off? And then the Irish language came along at some point. I think this kind of curiosity came from not knowing and not understanding, having any sense of understanding maybe of the different layers or migrations into Ireland. And indeed, the story is still unfolding. So if somebody on YouTube tells us, "No, you're wrong." Okay, somebody on YouTube would always tell you you're wrong. But if somebody tells me, "No, Owen, you're wrong. It was on Tuesday, the 19th of January, 1900 BC at 10 a.m. that the Irish language arrived into Ireland." Right. Thanks. You don't know that, and we don't know that. So I'm kind of stretching the argument a bit. But it's trying to weave together a curiosity and tell a bit more about the Irish language in doing so. But I think ultimately it always relates back to us and our perspective of our current time. And for me, it brings me back to a more ancient or a longer horizon of time than just fixing up the lunch and figuring out what's for dinner and running to soccer training and everything like that. So I recently drove one Sunday morning to Mohan from Limerick, and it was a very cold weather. It was frosty. I actually hit ice a couple of times on the road there, and I didn't take my normal route. The normal route takes me along the motorway and jumps off the motorway at Newmarket and Fergus and straight up to Mohan, which is just on the perimeter of the Dromoland estate. So this time I took a bit of a meandering way, came off the motorway at Cratlow, went from Cratlow along through the countryside to 6 Mile Bridge, and you're kind of following the railway, the Ennis Limerick Railway, in doing this trip. And then from 6 Mile Bridge, it was taking a small road in the direction of Newmarket and Fergus, but you don't get to Newmarket and Fergus, you get to Mohan eventually. Mohan Hillfort, it's an unassuming location. I mean, the car park for it is open and free, and it's in a little woodlands. When you look at it from the map, the woodlands, it's like a little section that has not been cut down, or it's regrown, or it's left alone. Like, so now the area, this small area, is woodland. And what I noticed actually coming up to Mohan Hillfort from like the 6 Mile Bridge side is the hill is significant enough. Like, you're climbing up. Okay, it's only about 75 meters in altitude at its peak, but a lot of the land around it is just it's beautiful rolling countryside with some hills, and a bit further away there are some mountains, say towards Loch Derg. But it looks out over the Shannon estuary, so you see the Shannon River and its estuary. And it's unassuming in that you walk to the hill fort, and it's on, you know, the top of this small hill, and you reach like basically a mound of rocks. It's a little stone, but what you've reached on the way in is a rampart, or a defense wall. So this defense wall, it's 6 meters thick in places, and it's about 1.4 kilometers in length, 0.87 miles, I think. So to give you an idea, like, this wall encapsulates the hill. It goes around the hill. And you can walk along this rampart. So rampart is like a defense wall. You can walk around the outside of it through the trees. I got a little lost, to be honest, but I was exploring, having really nice time. Actually, it was like -2 Celsius. It was frozen. My fingers were getting frozen. I was losing like the full use of my finger. It was on the camera, but had a really interesting, you know, walk around. And this wall, it's not a new wall. It's from Bronze Age times, late Bronze Age, in Ireland. I've read that it started around 950 BC. So we're talking the bones of 3,000 years ago. So that's to put an age on this wall. So there's not much to the wall, but you walk in and, you know, there's a modern path now. It's done. There's a gravel path so you can walk around. So it's very accessible. But the interesting thing is that rampart has been there for 3,000 years, an amazing amount of time. And then you walk further in, kind of going up the small hill, and there's two more ramparts. So the entire structure was three ramparts, or walled defenses, at the top of a hill. And they're still there, give or take. And there's plenty of mounds of these stones around the hill. Now, it seems from what I've been reading that a lot of the rampart rocks were, you know, used for later construction. And even that is some of it prehistoric. More stones might have been taken for a somewhat more recent construction. But the ramparts survive. Like, they're there, and so you see these three layers. You pass through these three layers, and I can envision walking through these walls 3,000 years ago. It brings me back to this, and I would guess that the level of the land has changed a bit, so these walls were much more significant when they were built. They wouldn't have kept out an army of men. So from what I understand, there were, you know, there was a handful or a couple of dozen families living inside these ramparts, but they were more a statement of power. So let's explore that a little bit. Archaeologist Owen Grogan published a book on Wuhan. I don't have it. I have it ordered, but it is referenced online elsewhere. And Owen Grogan estimates that this construction of the three ramparts might have taken 2,250 people 10 years to construct. I mean, well, just imagine the power and the influence that the king or the chieftain needed to get this done. I saw a figure that maybe in this chiefdom, this area where the hill sits in, might have had a population of around 9,000 people scattered around. So depending on the importance of the family, they lived in well-protected structures or maybe not so well-protected. It makes me ask the question, I mean, like, 2,250 people, like, what about their jobs that they had to go to? I mean, did they show up on weekends? I'm joking. To construct this, were they doing it full time? Was it like a mehl where they would show up as a community and build for a week and then go back to their farms? Like, what did this look like when you're talking about 2,250 people? I don't know. I'd love to get more information about that estimate, but it gives us just an idea that this isn't just like a wall. It's a wall over a kilometer in length, and it's a defensive wall, a big one, and probably you had to climb through some entrance structure that's since, you know, fallen away. I don't know, I wonder. But what's written about it is more than it being a residence, it was like a statement of power for the new chieftain. It was exposed at the time at the top of the hill for all to see, and it would be a place for community to get together and maybe a place of ritual. Now, I'm personally very interested in Neolithic rock art, so older rock art, say Bruna Boyne, Newgrange. I find it really intriguing, and there's no such like rock art that I'm aware of at Mughan Hillfort. But that's not to say that there weren't like rituals and gatherings and important markings of the calendar, you know, happening in this chiefdom at Mughan Hillfort. So we're asking the question, did these people speak Irish? And there's been more recent developments at Mughan Hillfort. So inside Mughan Hillfort, there are two what look like well-constructed castles. So to give you an idea, it's like, I would describe it as like a small field encapsulated by a more significant wall that would really looks like it would protect what was inside or who was living inside, maybe with their animals. I've seen dates that these castles might be between 1000 AD and 1300 AD. So we're talking, let's say, 1,000 years ago, maybe as close as 700 years ago, that people came and really like built up settlements there. I find that intriguing because imagine that was 2,000 years after the construction of the hill fort. that people moved into Wuhan and built these defensive castles to live in. I mean, 2,000 years between those two developments, that's as much time as now back to Jesus. It's a long, long time. So there was something at Wuhan for a very long time. And it makes me wonder as well, like, what happened in between. There was the long forgotten chief or chieftain, 950 BC. And then what? Was it being used like as a agricultural center, like by farmers along the way? Was it always settled? Was it just like empty ruins? I'm not sure. But it seems like now in history, so in written history, in the 1800s, when the locals were asked what was this thing, they didn't think it was more than a quarry for the local more recent castle that had been built, Wuhan Castle, for example. So it wasn't clear that there was a structure all around the hill. It was just like, you know, probably brambles and overgrowth and not much in significance compared to how it would have been originally. And then my view of Wuhan has changed the more I've learned about it. Like, these inner castles, when I sit in there and imagine their ancientness, I go, okay, this structure is old, and I'm feeling it. And then there's accounts that these castles may have been kind of reconstructed, and the insides, the grassy part, is now kind of cleared away of what was there before. Maybe there was like remnants of structures in there, cleared away. The wall was rebuilt. So the form of the wall may be crisper and cleaner than it would have been if it had not just been left as it was. I don't know, like, the story of ancient structures like this, the same in Newgrange. I mean, the chamber, the burial chamber at Newgrange, as far as I can tell, is the original construction. Yet the outside of Newgrange, the wall outside Newgrange, is a reconstruction based on what the archaeologists thought it might have looked like before it had fallen down, disintegrated. So when we visit these places, there is no one answer. Like, what we're seeing is the story of millennia of humans and humans interacting with the stone and the location. So let's zoom into the question a bit more of, did these people speak Irish? So there's a couple of layers, isn't there? There are the original people who built the Wuhan Hill Fort, starting 950 BC, estimated date. And then there's the people quite much later on, to about almost 2,000 years or about 2,000 years later, who built the castles within the ramparts. So the amount of time is quite breathtaking for me when I consider it. And so the question of the original, like, let's say the chieftain who had this built, did that community speak an ancient form of Irish? And it's this that I put my hands up. I'm not a linguist. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not an ancient geneticist. I'm an Irish language speaker. I've got a deep curiosity around these things. And when I visit the sites, I feel deep curiosity and questions coming up for me. So that's where I'm coming from it. So hi, YouTube haters. Okay, so the people who built Wuhan Hill Fort at the start, it's said that it's a late Bronze Age in Ireland. So did these people work with metal, or were they like hunter-gatherers with stone axes? No, it wasn't hunter-gatherers. They were people who worked with metal. So I guess they had metal, like armor or weapons. metal tools, utensils, jewelry. And I think this is a good point to mention the gold hoard find of Mukden. So the story goes in the 1800s that there were workers working on improving the railway line that goes very close to Mukden Hill Fort. It goes through Mukden North, which is not far from the hill fort. Down the hill a little bit, I think. They came upon some objects and just kind of discarded them. They came across some objects. At first they were being like discarded, like they were digging the ground, right? And then somebody realized, wait a second, this is gold. And they had found gold objects like jewelry, necklaces. And these have been dated to 800 BC. And not many of these objects still remain. A significant portion of them were sold and smelted. So a lot of it didn't survive, unfortunately. But it's perhaps the biggest gold find, like of gold objects, from the Bronze Age in Western Europe. So a significant finding. And it kind of stands to reason that the gold hoard was connected in some way to the hill fort, to the riches and to the power of the people of the hill fort, or maybe recent descendants of those people. We're talking in the dates, if we look at the dates directly, we're talking like 150 years between the start of the hill fort and when these objects would have been made. But then again, like we're talking, we can't pinpoint decades at this point. So these are only kind of estimates, but it seems like the dates of the hill fort and the dates of these gold objects of like extreme wealth are linked in some way. Okay, so the people who built Mukden Hill Fort were Bronze Age people with access to metal, to bronze technology, innovations. There would have been trading going on to a certain extent. There was metalwork going on around the hill fort even before the hill fort was constructed. So these were a metalworking community. And then I come at all this with kind of the narrative of when I would have grown up, of like, who are Irish people? Like, where does the Irish language come from specifically? So the idea of the Celts coming to Ireland maybe around 2,000 years ago, around the time of Christ, and the Irish language, you know, evolving in Ireland since over the past 2,000 years, a lot of it being written down early on, like starting with Om, the old use of alphabet to inscribe onto stone. But it seems like the story of when did the Irish language, you know, Irish language, the ancestor of the Irish language, when did it come to Ireland? And it seems like the theories are like pushing it further back, further and further back. So I think this is a good time to look at this a bit. In 2015, there was a landmark study that incorporated the study of ancient DNA. And it was titled Neolithic and Bronze Age Migration to Ireland and Establishment of the Insular Atlantic Genome. It was landmark because it was the first study to use whole genome data. So the study of ancient DNA, I'm no ancient geneticist. From what I understand, they were able to use the whole profile of DNA of a number of prehistoric bodies that had been found in Ireland, and to study these to try to ask questions like, who were these people? The first person in the study, or the first person mentioned, was a Neolithic woman from a megalithic burial. So my understanding of Neolithic, this is older than, say, the Bronze Age in Ireland. These were early farmers in Ireland, so not hunter-gatherer peoples, but, you know, maybe somewhat of an organized society. And the estimated age of her DNA was between the years of 3,343 BC and 3,020 BC. So 5,000-year-old body in Ireland. And the study found that she had some hunter-gatherer markers in her DNA, but she was from like a wide population. And this suggested like strong, I guess, population growth, and that there was a big population change in Neolithic times from when like these farmers came into Ireland. I'm saying like and because I'm no expert. I've simply read a part of the study because of my interest in it. And then there were three Bronze Age individuals in the study as well, who had been found on Rathlin Island, which is off the like north or slightly northeast coast of the island of Ireland, and not far from Scotland. And these were Bronze Age individuals. So if we're looking at Bronze Age, now we're talking about more of the era of when Moohan Hill Fort had been constructed. The age of the body, these three bodies, was estimated between the years of 2026 BC and 1534 BC. So we're talking about 4,000 or 3,500 years ago, in that range. And what was found in this ancient DNA study was, these people showed substantial steppe genetic heritage indicating the European population upheavals of the third millennium manifested all of the way from southern Siberia to the Western Ocean. What I understand from this is these people had the genetic markers of those people originating from the steppes north of the Black Sea. So in modern day, like Ukraine, eastwards through Russia and that area. The study, from my interpretation of it, concludes with the like possibility that these three people are basically extrapolating that these three people show that there was a big genetic change at Bronze Age time. So after the original early farmers in Ireland, that there was a migration, a change in genetics. So my understanding of all this is that the points of evidence are few and far between, but there are points of evidence. So archaeologists, ancient geneticists, linguists, all going to try to triangulate their findings and new information that ancient DNA studies are exposing. So they force maybe a relook at the narrative that, you know, if we look at pottery or archaeology, like findings of physical objects, they might show like a change of culture, a change of innovations. But did it bring language with it? Did it bring a change of peoples with it? I think my understanding is that's been like an open debate, saying like, well, maybe there was an influx of a way to do pottery, but not necessarily a language change with it. Now, really interesting for me is this study from 2015, Cassidy et al. They look at the question of linguistics. They ask the question, did it show a change of language into Ireland starting 4,000 years ago? And the authors are indicating or hinting at, I think, their belief that there was this linguistic change in Ireland starting 4,000 years ago, and it came with the genetic change. It was a migration of people, and they say in their article that in the yeah the article that this is when the like typical markers of DNA found now in Ireland, it reaches back to that time, like 4,000 or 3,500 years ago. They say that it opens the possibility that an ancestor of the Irish language came to Ireland starting, say, about 4,000 years ago. So I think the best we can do with this information in front of us is kind of extrapolate hypotheses. We're not making a conclusion of fact. We're trying to tell the story and ask the question, did the people who built Muán Hillfort speak an ancient form of the Irish language? So that was about 950 BC, and the story that the ancient DNA might be telling us is that an ancestor of the Irish language may have been here a good 1,000 years before Muán Hillfort had been started to be built. So if we follow that course of logic, it would seem to imply that yes, very possibly the local chieftain who had Muán built was speaking an ancient form of what we now know as the Irish language, what has become the Irish language now. I find that really intriguing, like this ancient wall. It's like growing up, you know, the idea of like the famine pictures of a cottage in the countryside, of desolation, of poverty, and that being like the origin or the source of the Irish language. But I hadn't seen a longer horizon where the Irish language might have been spoken a lot longer than that. And as long back as the people who built Muán Hillfort. I find that intriguing, and I don't have the answer, so that's a hypothesis, but I find this really interesting, and I hope that you do too. And then there's the question of the castles, these smaller defensive structures inside Muán Hillfort that were built, let's say, 1,000 years ago or a bit less. Did those people, that new wave of people who came to Muán to use Muán as a settlement, did they speak Irish? And it would seem like, yeah, it seems quite clear. By then, it's certain that the Irish language was widespread across Ireland. There's always been an influx of different languages into Ireland, so there is no one answer. But I can think we can assume that the people who built the castles inside the Muán Hillfort did speak Irish as well. And it's just amazing to think that between those two like waves or happenings of population where construction was happening, there was a 2,000 year gap between them, but that both of these communities would have been speaking their own a form of the Irish language at the time. And I know, like, this question, it's wide open, but the research is telling us more and more as the years pass by, and they force us to like re-triangulate the stories. For me, it's to what's the aim of this question? It's who were these people constructing these prehistoric, these ancient sites? Trying to build up a picture, I guess, of who they are. And personally, it definitely brings me a sense of connection to the amount of time that's there between today and when these structures would have been built. And I do have a personal intrigue in Neolithic rock art in particular. So the older than Mohan Hill Fort, let's say, well older than Mohan Hill Fort, would have been, let's say, Brú na Boinne, Newgrange, and the beautiful rock art that's there to be seen in the stone. And for me, that rock art shows some kind of tuning into cosmic time, of older time, of infinite time, and their recognition, the recognition of those people, that there is a longer time than what's for dinner, what's for lunch, I have to feed the dog. For me, I have to catch a breath of air and go, wow, the expansiveness of time is amazing. And the Irish language is part of this because it's this living form, when we're speaking in Irish together, we're speaking something, of course, that's old, it's ancient. Every language is the descendant of a long path. But speaking the Irish language and visiting these ancient sites, they're interwoven for me. So I hope you've enjoyed this. Have you ever visited Mohan Hill Fort? Would you consider visiting Mohan Hill Fort after going on this exploration with me? I'd love to hear from you, so leave a comment and subscribe.
I've got to admit, I'm fascinated by prehistory and archaeology myself too. Some of these questions are so tantalizing. We want to get the answer, but it doesn't always seem like we can grasp it. I studied the language side of things at university myself, but although Irish is considered to have the third oldest literature in Europe, after Greek and Latin, our earliest texts are still from the first millennium AD, so there's nothing that we have that's before the era of Christ, and nothing nearly as old as what Owen is talking about, nothing written down anyway. So just no evidence. Doesn't mean they weren't speaking it, but no written evidence. All well and good, says you, but how can I speak Irish to people in 2024? Of course, a good place to start is with membership of Bite Size Irish. We have a host of online lessons and services, including for the first time ever, Bite Size Irish Study Week, Seachtain Foghlama, this February. That's an exclusive, folks. So to get involved, just go to offer.irish to get your 10% off every month or year of membership. That's offer.irish to get your exclusive podcast listeners discount of 10% off your Irish language journey. So I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. We'll be back again in a fortnight's time. But if you'd like to check the original video out, which Owen made, there's some nice atmospheric pictures to go along with it too. You might enjoy that too. Okay, I'll be talking to you again in 2 weeks' time. Slán leat.